I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
The Survivor Specialists are back, and today I am digging deeper into episode number 8 of Survivor 49 with Andy Rueda from Survivor 47. He is back for the second season in a row, ready to discuss what took place last night with some split tribals. I made the title of this, Rizzo Becomes Riz God Baby. Of course, you got to put the baby at the end of it. Great gameplay last night. And I'm excited to get your thoughts on everything that's been going on, not just on this last episode, but on this season as a whole.
Super, super happy to be here, Phil. I've said it once. I've said it again. I really, really like your podcast, but you are my mother's favorite podcast. And so I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to contribute. But I'm super happy to talk about the season. I think we're at a very interesting point in time with it. I think I agree with a lot of people. Maybe the pre-merge is on the sleepy side, but I see a lot of potential in the next few weeks. So this is a good time to come on and talk.
I love that. Yeah, and I love to hear that your mom, I'm her favorite podcaster, your mom and Kyle's wife, Kyle, winner of 48, they need to get together and like do a podcast with me, because Kyle just kept telling me, he's like, Maggie loves you, man. That's it. She wants to listen to your podcast. And then he was listening to RHAP. I was like, wait, what are you doing? I thought you only listened to me. What is this betrayal? But yeah, it feels like there's a lot of momentum here. And I complained a lot last night about certain elements, and most of it was from the split tribe. And they led to some heated comments over on our last video. It's quite interesting to see how our fans seemed very split on whether they liked the episode or didn't like the episode last night. And I thought it was a good episode. There were some things that annoyed me, but where did you fall into it? Are you able to kind of push the fact that they split up again and just look at the gameplay, or is it still in the back of your mind too?
I think that this is one of the better episodes of the season, because there is a lot to talk about. And when it comes to the new era and the twist, I think that you have to pick your battles. Like, there have been a lot of changes, and people have mixed opinions about almost all of them. But like, I don't get riled up about every single change. So when it comes to the unmerged split situation that happens every season, for me, it doesn't piss me off nearly as much as my battle is Mergatory. So I love the season just for that, because they got rid of Mergatory. That was my hill to die on. As far as this one goes, I don't have a huge complaint about it in principle, but it really, there's not a high upside with the split tribal twist. Like, I don't think it's generated so many amazing blindsides or episodes. I think though that this might be one of the better iterations of that, because I don't like when it serves as a double boot. I think that gets rushed. This was just one, like I had on my season, but I think, say what you will, like, I think sometimes they contrive these small tribe setups because they're in a mood to prefer small tribal councils over big tribal councils. I'm still not sure why that's the case.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think that this kind of did generate a sort of novel situation. I'm happy to talk about it, just in the sense of, I think this was a uniquely great situation to give Rizzo a ton of power from the bottom. And I'd like to talk about that with you. Obviously, he played it excellently, but when you look at it, he is the odd man out of the five, before, especially before Savannah gets there. But the fact that it was a known idol became a very high leverage situation for him, because there was no easy split, right? And so there are four other people, but their loyalties aren't divided such that there was like an easy person to split the vote on. That's what caused a lot of the mayhem in the first place, right? So for that reason, I thought that this was a tribal council that we have a lot to dig into.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that was like what Will was saying last night, is that going results-based, this really did work out. It worked out perfectly results-based, but the problem is, like you said, there's not a lot of upside to this normally. So in the grand scheme of what Survivor is, constantly splitting the teams up more often than not is going to lead to some pretty lopsided boots. I mean, even in your season, it was going to be Rachel gets saved by Saul. it's a very easy Tiana boot. Like it's very straightforward a lot of the time when these splits happen. And I do think what got me with last night, and it took me, you know, settling in, calming down, figuring it out. Yeah. I think for me was with all of the swaps they did in the pre-merge, right? We have seen two swaps, mm-hmm. then we saw a merge, then we saw another flip here. So we had a swap to 7 versus 7 at 14. We had a swap to 3 tribes of 4 at 12. We merged at 11, and now we have two groups of 5 at 10. So that's 4 different iterations of who's playing with who in 5 episodes. I understand that the game is different now, but at the same time, I want to see some of the people who aren't going to tribals. Every time you do one of these iterations, yes, it creates maybe more of a chance of chaos with a different group of people going to tribal, but instead, MC, Sophie, Christina never went to tribals in the pre-merge. Mm-hmm. Last night was the first time Sophie was actually in danger. And I feel like I would have liked to have seen what say other people wanted to have in this. Now, did it work out perfectly that Rizgod was in this situation, had the known idol, had bluffed last time, is with the right side of Uli numbers, has people, like, everything worked out absolutely exquisitely for them last night. But, you know, I can't help but be like, stop with the split. Just let us watch a 10, a 9, an 8, a 7 vote. Those are normally more interesting. And don't tell me we can't do those just because 48 maybe was boring in those moments.
Right. I tend to agree for sure. I think this is the first, like, they've split up into different tribes 3 times this season in different iterations. This is the first one where it kind of was lucky and it kind of worked out for them from an entertainment standpoint. And so it's like a deeper question where, in theory, I'm like a proponent of tribe swaps, like at least variety. So you don't know whether you're swapping or not. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they did something new. And I'm glad that they swapped twice in the season, but it makes me think in retrospect, I wonder if it has contributed to like a lot of the season so far in the sense that like on an individual basis, I think they've knocked it out of the park again. I like this cast. I like this group of people. Mm-hmm. I think that they're interesting. I think that they've come to play. I don't have the basic, you know, cookie cutter complaints about casting in the new era. I think it's in a good place. But with this season, I feel like there's something not electric about it yet. Like I was describing this to someone else, but you know, before a season, when one season ends, there's the season preview. And if you're not spoiled by Inside Survivor and stuff, like these are the first time you're seeing those people, you have this cognitive sense of like, that's just like a random group of people. Like who are, like, what the heck? Like who are these people out playing Survivor? And then it isn't until retrospect where you're like, oh yeah, if you rewatch that trailer, it's like, oh yeah, Christian, Angelina, like, of course, like this is an incredible season. For 49, I feel like we're 8 episodes in and we're still kind of in that, at least me. I'm like, this is kind of just like a random group of people playing Survivor. I don't know. And so when it comes to the format of the season, I feel like I think they've maybe just had a couple of bad luck with the swaps and how conducive those swaps were to storylines. Mm-hmm. And obviously at the start, we had the Disaster Tribe storyline. It's a whole other kettle of fish. I think that's a bit repetitive in the new era, right? But for whatever reason, I think we're just starting to get a picture of like, what are the overall arching narratives of the season? And you know, what, regardless of the new era, old era, like a season needs those arcs to be compelling and to like be considered a good season. So again, I have hope, but I think maybe the switches and swaps, and they've done it so much this season, I think it didn't really work for like this group.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. And I think what you said at the beginning of that whole entire like comment there was you want it to be different. Right. And I think that's where I come from too, is if you're going to do a tribe swap and you want to go from 3 to 2, fine. But I also think some seasons should start with 2. Some should tribe swap to 2. Some should go to 3. Some should like just mix it up. And I feel like mixing it gets so repetitive. And Will had this crazy analogy. I don't know if you listened to our episode last night, but he did this crazy analogy about the stadium. And he was saying how it feels like it was already, the blueprint was there. And even though they had to move it, they didn't change it. There was no adaptation. Jeff is asking the players to adapt. That's what he wants here, right? He wants the players to be on their toes and do it. But I don't feel like production's on their toes at the same level at this point. And I think that when you see what you're like, what you're saying here, they had already thought we're going to do two tribes at this time. We're going to do three tribes at this time. We're going to split up at this time. They didn't think about it from what happens if somebody does get medevaced. Is that going to impact our game? You think about Survivor Palau, because one tribe got decimated, they went away from doing a merge, doing a traditional merge. Like, they were able to change things up and adapt to what the game was. And yeah. So, you know, when you then go into the other problem of what does that mean for characters? Well, you got down to the final 11 and three of those 11 people had not been to tribal council. Well, who were the three people we'd heard the least from going into the merge? Those three people. Of course they were, because they hadn't gone to a tribal yet. They had not been impactful on the game in any way, shape, or form. And so I understand that sometimes that can just work out, but that's why I'm a big proponent of a two tribe start to a two tribe to another swap that goes to two tribes. By the time you hit the merge, everybody's going to have gone to tribal council. Yeah. Maybe you're going to have one person who gets really, really lucky, but in most case scenarios, you're going to have everybody go to tribal council. So everybody's going to know where they stand. We are going into final 10 or final nine now. And there are people who have gone to one tribal council together and they've been on the beach together since day one. That's insanity. Like somebody like Steven, and I know Steven got swapped away from his people at one point, but like Steven and Christina, I think were on the beach together every single day, except for that three tribe of four. And they've gone to one tribal council together.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I agree. I think that, so the whole narrative of like people not going to tribal in the whole pre-merge because there's another disaster tribe, that was cool the first few times. Like it was cool in Palau, it's cool in Philippines just because it was new, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that it is sort of a feature of the new era, and I think that comes down to losing your flint has a compounding effect and blah blah blah. Yeah, I think it makes it less rich. I think in a vacuum it is much better for a season to get to know players and establish them as characters before the merge happens. And the only real way to do that is for them all to touch tribal council. So I agree with you. And then as far as like you mentioned, like I think this whole new era has been, from Survivor's standpoint, from a creative standpoint, it's been one project. And I want to give them some credit because I think that in a way, in some respects, it's been good that they've stuck to their guns, because if they listened to all the feedback from 41 and 42, they would have scrapped everything and they would have, whatever, started over. Who knows? I think 43 to 44, that's not my favorite like group of seasons, but they went in the right direction. They got rid of Do or Die. They got rid of the Hourglass. But for other things like the Beware Advantage and the Shot in the Dark, particularly, I actually actively like the Shot in the Dark. And I understand their standpoint of what we're going to do is we're going to let this define this era of Survivor, and we're going to stick to our guns so that as time goes on, players are going to learn from the mistakes of the early new era, and they're going to become more familiar with these new mechanics, and it's going to lead them to use it in innovative ways. And I think to some degree that has paid off, especially if you look at the Shot in the Dark. I think people look at it way more creatively now than they did in 41 and 42. And so I want to give them some credit for that. But I think that if anything, you could say that they've probably erred too much on the side of sticking to their guns, and they've become very stubborn, and some things they've let ride on too long, which is you know, the other side of the coin. I am not Mr. Hate the New Era. I think that, especially, I think they've done one of the better things, in my opinion, in Survivor history. And this is just my take. But going to 90 minutes is super positive. It's a super positive change, I think. And right off the bat, I think 45 through the pre-merge of 48 is low-key like a golden stretch of Survivor. Like, agreed. And I'm biased partly, of course, I'm biased. But it's great Survivor. Like, and I think you would take so much of that over the Mactor era, you know what I mean? But a lot of things get romanticized as time goes on. But that being said, it's not perfect. That's not perfect.
I get that. Hey, look, if it wasn't for those first three episodes or first four episodes of 46, you're right. Like, there's really not a bad episode in that stretch. Yeah, but then you have those first four episodes. But then the post-merge of that is so crazy. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is, like, what are we coming out of last night not doing? Last night, we're coming out not talking about Alex and Sophie Bellarity at all. And so, like you said, they get a little stubborn with some of the stuff they are committed to that they feel like they just have to keep going with. Sophie and Alex Bellarity are on the disaster tribe to start. That is the yep. easiest rooting interest for anybody, right? We all rooted mm-hmm. for Emily Flippin. We all rooted for Caleb. Even though neither one of them went very far, we still rooted for them. Mary, they didn't do a good job of telling her story at all last season, right, in my opinion. Right. But
yeah,
maybe she didn't give them enough. I don't know. But her story was not well told, despite coming from the Disaster Tribe. Say ate up so much screen time, she went out early. Mm. Sophie and Alex are still in the game. They didn't go to Tribal last night.
Right.
And so I understand that Savannah is the focal point of the season so far, dominating confessional counts. She's been all over the place. But at the same time, Savannah has gone to way fewer tribal councils than both of those people, right? Like, or maybe she's gone to the same amount at this point, but she's yeah. definitely gone to less than Sophie. I don't know if she's gone to as many as Alex at this point. But my point is, here's two people that were easy to latch onto. They survived the disaster. They get to a tribe swap. Sophie Bellarity continues to survive. Alex hasn't gone to tribal. We get them all together. Alex and Sophie don't play together. And we go, oh my God, what's going on here? Like, that's not good. What does this mean? And the next episode, they don't even go to tribal. We barely hear from either of them. And I think that that is one of the main reasons why a split like this is bad, because we are at final 10. And by doing this split, you're ensuring we really don't hear from four people. And two of those four people are two of the most important people to the story of what Survivor 49 is. And I barely said Sophie or Alex's name last night. And that blows my mind, because it's been the whole season.
No, I totally agree. Like, no, it's high time we got everyone in the mix. Like, these people need to be going to tribal council every mm-hmm. time at this point, especially like people who are under edited, like Christina. Like, we just want to see, you know, where their game is at. It makes a season so much richer if you know everyone's, at least have a taste of everyone's point of view, right? When it comes to Alex and Sophie, it's like they got a ton of screen time in the pre-merge, obviously. That's natural. And I think. And I like Alex a lot, but in particular, Sophie was quite compelling in the pre-merge. I think they really built her up. You know what I mean? But it could go one of two ways, because they built up Mary like so much in 48 in the pre-merge. But
yeah,
I guess from a narrative standpoint, and we don't have all the pieces yet, I guess it didn't go anywhere in the post-merge, or it didn't develop into something even more compelling. And so they focused on other things. With Sophie, she's had a quiet episode. Probably quite two episodes since the merge, if I'm remembering correctly. But it's just going to remain to be seen. Like, I think one thing I could say pretty confidently is that, like, her and Alex's relationship isn't going to be like a season defining thing, because I think we would have gotten more of their relationship in particular. If anything, they were like kind of mutual friends through Jake, right? And that's just, they didn't forge their way to the merge together as a disaster tribe, like how it usually is with Malcolm and Denise, because like in those situations, they are the duo that's dictating votes. The best version of this in the new era is Shannon Ricard, right? And that paid off. That like became a huge storyline in the post-merge. And so it's kind of what I will always love about Survivor is that, and I've seen it firsthand, they put in real effort telling the story of what actually happened out there. They're not contriving things. They're not trying to make things up out of whole cloth. They're not trying to, like, you know, invent storylines. They see what happens out there. They trust the players to an extent, although maybe you could
disagree with that enough,
twist. Yeah.
But you know,
but they're like, they basically, I think they trust the way that they see it. They're like, our twists are so good and our casting is so good. So that no matter what, it's going to be great. And I, more than anything, I respect that they do that, because if they started messing with that, then it just, for me, it wouldn't be worth watching anymore. You know what I mean?
And what do you want? Here's what I keep coming back to. And I feel like, you know, when I come out of watching the episode, if I'm pissed off, it's like I had 3 minutes to like calm myself down and my jersey comes out. You know what I mean? Like I start getting that personality. But now that I've had more time, I want Survivor to be about the players. Like you said, like the players are supposed to be the stars. And when something like the split at the second half of the game, that becomes now the focal point of last night's episode, is that they split. Yes, Rizzo and Savannah were able to do great things with that split, but there's eight other people on that island mm-hmm. that weren't able to do great things with that split. Two of them maybe made the wrong move. Jawan and Sage, I think, played that pretty poorly last night, but we can get into that a little bit more. Yeah, but at the same time, it's like we're seeing this production twist, this push makes it more about production. And Jeff even going down the line with the bag, Will was really ragging on him yesterday, saying he's so, I don't want to look. Oh, I'm so excited. It's like, it's not about Jeff. It's not about, we see Jeff every season, right? This is like when you go home to your hometown and you want to hang out with like the friends you can only see there, but somebody from that you live near also lives near there. And like, oh, let's get together. It's like, no, I'm not seeing you this weekend. I'm going to see you again. I need to see the people I see once a year. And I don't know. It just felt like it became the focal point last night. And I feel like whenever they do the split post merge, I do feel like that becomes the focal point because we're not just letting the players play the game. Mm-hmm. And look, yeah. I think Savannah and Rizzo probably could have still excelled last night and still survived this tribal council if it was a full 10-person tribal council.
Yeah.
But we'll never know because we got this version instead.
All right. Well, I am gaining even more confidence and trust that Rizzo is going to be making right decisions. I've really, really enjoyed him as a player so far. But to your point, I think, okay, so with when it comes to this split thing, I think the downside is that it's just kind of boring. Like, I mean, like we earned by watching the pre-merge, we've earned the point where we can watch them all play together. And that's what we want to see. That's what we want to see. So I don't like that. But I think, and this might be a point that Will made yesterday, but I think on the other side of things, to be fair, it's not a twist anymore. So it's just like, so it's a mechanic at this point. It's built in, especially the new era. It's built in as a mechanic. And so I guess the reasoning would be, or maybe a defense of it, is that maybe the excellent player can see it coming around away. And no, they're not going to control who's on what tribe. But, you know, if maybe they start engineering scenarios so that they're good no matter what happens, because unless I'm mistaken, well, no, it doesn't happen at the same exact time every season. But you can see it coming. It's like kind of like you're not a Big Brother person, but like
I'm not
a double eviction. It's going to be in a certain window. Like if it's not this week, it's going to be the next week. So so it's not my least favorite thing. And it led to a pretty interesting vote. And so I'd like to talk about the vote. Like it was not like the most electric blindside or anything, but it was a really good vote to talk about in the sense that like you can judge everyone's decision, which is cool.
And yeah. So
yeah.
Go ahead, dive in. What do you think? Did Juwan Sage, the decision that they made to ultimately vote for MC last night, right? Decision in your pain or wrong?
I want to preface by saying Sage and Juwan are two of my favorites this season. So this is a pro Juwan podcast.
Yeah.
Love Juwan. And I love Sage, who is the alternate on Survivor 47. And for whatever reason, that's a huge bonding point. Like, you know, like Survivor preseason is such a weird, it's a bizarre, unique experience. You share it with anyone, you're bonded in some way. So I'm rooting for the both of them. As far as just like judging it, the biggest takeaway is that it does feel like they let Rizzo off the hook pretty easily. You know, I feel like the last vote was a big statement. It's like we're flipping, you know, and it's like they're at the merge, the real pivotal merge vote, which was an exciting vote last episode. They put lines in the sand and they went against the Uli tribe, and it would make a little bit more intuitive sense that they would stay on that for at least for a bit and not just say never mind and start working with Rizzo and Savannah again. So that I get the sense that it wasn't the optimal move for them, but I want to talk about the really interesting dynamic, like I mentioned at the top, where they don't have as much leverage as usual because Rizzo and his idol do have a ton of leverage, especially given the makeup of the tribe. And I think, here's who I could point to who could have done something differently. Sophie could have done something differently. And let me try to pinpoint what it is. They are all facing the dilemma that if they just pile on Rizzo, and this is before Savannah gets here. So actually I want to state, they're like, it all becomes moot when Savannah gets there. But when it's just the five of them, they're all staring down the barrel of, we load up our boats on Rizzo, he can play his idol and vote for whoever he wants. And so Sophie has the instinct to, you know, put a split on someone. That's cool. But numerically, I think for her, it would have been better to do the sort of opposite, because it doesn't seem to me like her and MC have all the trust in the world that they went against each other when shit hit the fan during this vote. But if she instead went to Juwan and Sage, they could have formed a triangle of trust, which is the absolute best thing you need in this particular scenario. Again, before Savannah gets here, when it's five of them, the only way to feel secure when your target has an idol is if you have splitting power, right? And so if the three of them look at each other and be like, if we coordinate, none of us are going home tonight, then that would have been great. And then I would have enabled Jawan and Sage to make what seems like the much better move and just getting Rizzo out. It didn't happen that way. And so it shook out in a different direction, but that's what I would say.
I didn't think about that last night, but I think that's a really good point. They could have neutralized Rizzo's idol before Savannah got there by saying, if Sophie goes over to them and says, hey, one of us, one of you and me, we're going to vote for MC. MC's going to vote for Rizzo. We're not going to tell her what's going on. MC's on the outs. And Sophie would be smart here to do that because she's looking at Sage and she's looking at Jawan and she's saying, you all have the power and I want to make sure I stay here. So rather than saying, I'm going to make myself the decoy vote and then almost realizing, oh shit, I actually would go home in this situation. I now need to backtrack.
Yeah.
If you go and you do exactly what you just said there, then that means that you could cause a 2-2 vote that MC doesn't realize she's not a part of until after the votes are read. But if you succeed and Rizzo goes home, you don't really care that you lose MC here because you feel like you have good enough relationships on the other side. You can talk to people through it, whatever. But if it doesn't work and Rizzo plays his idol, you ensure MC goes home. And that's not a bad case scenario either because you just backstabbed her and now she's out of the game. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Either way, you're making somebody mad in that situation because maybe now either Rizzo doesn't trust you ever again or maybe MC doesn't trust you ever again. But you're also building a stronger bond with the other two people with you.
And
then you know you have Steven back there. You got a group of four going back to that camp at least feeling really good going into final nine no matter what happens in that situation.
Right. And like they're all at that stage, they're all in survival mode, right? And so I think it would have been good. And I know that – again, like then Savannah comes and then it's six, but I think here's what's interesting though. I think this kind of low key exposes almost like a survivor rule, and the rule is, or at least it's a huge pattern. And the pattern is if you don't have if players don't have the security, if they don't have a splittable majority, right? Like, players almost never elect to call someone's bluff when they have a public idol. And this was tested a lot in the old era, I think, you know, with Russell and whatever, and Tony, you know, it goes down the line. And I think that's something, I think for future players, I think that's actually really, it's a really nugget of wisdom where it's like, if you have an idol, like it could, especially in these situations, really pay to have it and to sort of wave it around because it is, I think, empirically acting as a deterrent. And like Rizzo, honestly, I don't think he really had no right to survive this tribal council with his idol.
No.
You know what I mean? He had no right to do that, but he was amazing in how he pulled it off. And I think this group in particular, look at how averse they were about the idol last tribal council. They had all the numbers in the world. But they were worried. They were worried about it, and it pushed the vote away from Rizzo. And so I think he's onto something here. And now that he's out of this sticky situation, he still has his idol. He can do even more damage with it because the rule of like it's like he could just play that card until they call his bluff. So
yeah.
I think it's very powerful.
It's a good point because I don't play poker, so maybe I'm misreading this, but it's almost like if you're in a poker tournament and you realize you're starting and getting close to the payout, you're starting to get close to the money, right? And you're up in chips, you have a lot of chips, you might start to play it a little bit safer because you're saying, I want to make sure I don't blow this opportunity and miss out on cashing in this in this tournament.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody who's low in chips, they start getting a little bit desperate. They start making maybe a little bit more foolish moves and start going all in a little bit more because they know that the odds of them getting to cashing out aren't very high. The only way they can make this different is to flip it. And so you start getting people who are playing for one more place, one more place, one more place. And I do feel like that happened a little bit last night because like Jawan and Sage had so much power and I don't think they realized how much power they had because Rizzo and Savannah showed up on that beach. And if you feel confident enough in Rizzo and Savannah to vote for MC, that means you feel confident enough that you could vote for Rizzo knowing that he's also going to vote for MC. Because if you're voting with Savannah and Rizzo in last night's episode and they don't vote with you, it's a 2-2-2 or you go home or whatever. You don't know what Savannah's advantage is, whatever. Like you, one of you could easily go home. So why are you, if you trust them enough that they're going to vote for MC, why don't you just say, okay, great, they're voting for MC, it can't be us. Let's try to get Sophie or MC to throw a vote at Rizzo. Rizzo goes home in a 3-2-1 in a worst case scenario there. And Rizzo's out of the game. He plays his idol. Rizzo's still in. You lose somebody else, but you know it's not going to be one of the two of you. And I think it's a great point. I think what happens, especially because there are so many twists, this is an argument I've made a lot during the new era. Sometimes players start to play scared because they don't know what's coming next. And they say, well, I don't want to make the big move now because that could backfire on me if we get split up or if there's multiple right. immunities or whatever it is. And so I think that if you're Rizzo and you are willing to be aggressive and you're willing to be that guy, there's enough people out there that don't have the killer instinct that are scared and will play and sit on their hands a little bit. And like you said, this is a pro Juwan podcast, but I think Juwan didn't realize that he was as high up as he was yesterday. And maybe it's because he was playing on the bottom for so long that when he finally got a little bit of power, he said, I don't want to give this up and I got to try to stay in the middle. But you stay in the middle for too long, you end up being the person that's easily expendable and you're 5 or 6.
Yeah. And it's a classic case possibly where, you know, I feel like maybe Rizzo did an amazing job with damage control and making them believe that it all was water under the bridge. In practice, I don't think that seems very likely. You know what I mean? It seems much more likely that Rizzo's going to go back to his people. They're still in the minority, but in a better situation if they still have Sophie. Mm-hmm. And they're going to throw Juwan under the bus, you know, the first chance they get, probably. And so you're right. It doesn't feel like a win for Juwan and Sage. And it does seem that Sage kind of had an awareness of that this wasn't going to be the right move for them. We'll see how it pays off.
And people are trying to say, well, Sage has the killer instinct. Well, she didn't force the hand. That's where her killer instinct goes. She has the right reads. But you have to be able to convince the people you need to convince to go along with your reunion. She wasn't able to do that.
And she wanted Savannah out the tribal council before. And that is more what I'm talking about. Because speaking of like bold moves, what I want from this discussion, but what I want from someone on 51 or 52 is for someone to have a public idol and kind of maybe bluff that they're going to play it. I want an alliance to be like, we're just going to load up on him anyway. we're going to load the votes on anyway. And I would particularly like that from someone in that alliance who knows in the back of their mind they're not going to be the ricochet.
What's a great example of this? And it works out perfectly for our patron because we're finishing up Philippines. We're going into Karamoan. It's the Three Amigo alliance there, whatever they called themselves, with Reynold, Eddie, and Malcolm all playing the idols. Yeah. And Eric Reichenbach sits there and says, just do the same thing. Just do the same vote. It doesn't matter. Just do the same vote. And it worked out perfect. And Eric, I think, is one of those underrated players ever because people just look at him giving up the idol. But he's made those type of decisions because he knew he wasn't going to be the ricochet. So who cares?
Who cares?
And I think you're right. If you can play the odds and say, it would take more than one person defecting and voting me out that I have a really good relationship with for me to go home, you have to take that shot. Because Rizzo just survived 2 tribal councils with an idol in the minority alliance. Savannah, now you gave Savannah enough time to get an advantage. You don't even know about Sophie's advantage.
Right.
Now it's 6-3.
Yeah.
It looks like next tribal council, there's going to be 2 people who are immune. 2 people are going to win immunity at the challenge. You're running out of time. The end of this game moves very quickly when there's fire at 4 and idols can be played through 5. All it takes now is one person to flip and idols. An idol messes everything up because you can't do a split. So, yeah, I agree. You have to just say, look, for me to win this game, Rizzo can't have the idol. Unless you think you can beat Rizzo at the end, like Kyle felt he could do with Eva last season. But I don't think anybody thinks they can beat Rizzo right now.
And, I mean, but speaking of him, he's always been great at confessionals. I love his confessionals this episode. And he's saying this exact thing. He had a great one. He was like, 10th and 4th makes no difference to me. You know, I'm going for the win. I think this is something that Jeff talks about all the time to people getting ready to play their first time. But in this case, it is a nugget of wisdom, I think. I think the sooner you can get your, you know, bearings right in the game and get your feet under you and recognize that, like, you should just swing for the fences. Not in a reckless way, but just in the sense of, like, you know, like to maximize your chances of winning for the most part, unless you are just cruising in an amazing situation that's been kind of set up for you based off of who you're playing with. Unless you're in that specific situation, your best chances of winning is going to be to take the status quo and literally force it your direction, you know? And that looks like different things to different types of players. So it's not just like play like your hair's on fire or whatever, do crazy bluffs. Like, but you should prioritize authorship in the game, especially if you make the post merge. That's something that's a mentality that clicked for me, you know, into the game, definitely not the start, but well
before Operation Italy though. So that was good. Thank you for at least having a click by then. So we had that moment, you know,
for sure. And I mean, speaking of Operation Italy, that is kind of when I was like, you know what? I'm in this actually very fun position where what I have in my favor right now is some short-term safety because no one wants to vote me out, but I'm having a long-term hill to climb in order to flip perception. But instead of being, and this is the way I looked at it, instead of making me feel desperate, that made me feel free because it's like, well, my best move is to do crazy shit like for the other every round until the final four, and then do something crazy at fire if I need to. And that's when Survivor's fun. That's when Survivor's fun. And that's, you know, that's just when magic can potentially happen. So if you're a Survivor player, like, I've understood all sides of it. I understand the fear. I understand the instincts to be defensive, the instinct to just claw your way another day. I was ultimately very lucky to have that sort of 360 Survivor experience, including the very freeing version, like going basically beast mode is fun.
Yeah. Well, and Savannah said it last night, right? She's essentially the pariah of this tribe. And she turns around and now she has power. And I think so many players at this point, and it's not just 49 here. I mean, 48 had plenty of this going on. And it's why I think 48 is a snooze for a lot of people. But players get scared of being the target, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think in Survivor, all of the great players have been a target and have found a way to survive it. If you trust yourself enough, you can survive it. Right. Yeah. You can figure out what you need to do in order to overcome the potential of it coming back on you. Sophie did this last night. I'm not going to lie. Sophie didn't play great last night, but Sophie made a couple mistakes last night and still managed to not be the person going home because she zigged when she needed to. She did what she had to do. And so she realized I made a mistake. I made a blunder. Let me go to Juwan. Let me talk to Juwan. And if it has to be MC, I've lost my power. Let it be MC. I made a mistake. But she survived that vote while she was being targeted or while people expected her to go. Now, ultimately, it was a better move for Rizzo to do this because, like he said, why get rid of the person everybody's ready to get rid of anyway? But I just think that you got to have faith in yourself to you know, when I used to run when I was in high school and college, it was always trust your training. Right. Mm-hmm. If you go out a little too hard, just trust that you're in good enough shape that you can do it. If you're as much of a fan as so many people who play this game are, trust that you could have the worst start imaginable. You could be Chris Doherty. You could be that person and you could still win Survivor. Just trust that you can do it. And I think we saw a little bit of lack of faith last night, just a little bit of, ooh, I don't know if I want to make this happen. And don't be scared to have that happen because I do think Juwan or Sage, whichever one of them gets voted out first, the other one's going to go, oh shit, we got to start playing hard. And they're going to get a little reckless and maybe they get to do, like you said, get a little freeing, but it might be a little too little too late.
Yeah. Well, what you said resonates with me, of course, obviously. I feel like what's good from from the standpoint of the season, from a viewer standpoint, it is good. Like speaking of Sophie, it wasn't a perfect round for her, but now she's battle tested. Now I feel like as a viewer, like now she has entered the game and now she's someone like I can think about and like, all right, like where she sit now, like what's she doing? That's where you want to, you know, like I wish that period of time happened sooner in this season where you feel like everyone's, you understand where everyone is and everyone started playing the game. So, so I'm rooting for her. And I think that this could be a good wake up call. It's good that she, you know, it's good she survived it.
Yeah. And who knows what's going on the other side? Cause now you have Christina, who's not battle tested. She went to one tribal, things went her way. She has an idol now, but Alex knows about the idol. Alex says he's going to tell people. Sophie has knowledge is power. Guess what? You know, that's not a spoiler, but that the breadcrumbs are so obvious there of where we're being led right now. And Steven, he's more battle tested. So now pretty much everybody at this final nine has been at a tribal council where it could have been them. Jawan maybe doesn't realize, but I mean, that four-person tribal that Jawan and Sage went to, it easily could have been one of them. Shannon wanted Jawan gone. So it really is only Christina who's not battle-tested at this point. And maybe for Sophie, this makes her play a totally different style of game. Who knows? I feel like last night, Sophie Bellarity, who we watched have no power for the entire game, got her power back and didn't do a thing. And that's again where it goes back to this split, because now her alliance is suddenly in a much better position, but she wasn't a part of it at all. It all happened around her. So now if Sophie Bellarity wins this season, which I still think she very easily could do, to me, she's still probably the favorite. If she wins this season, she wasn't present for the moment that allowed her tribe or her alliance to regain control of the game. And I just think that there's still plenty of stuff she can do, but this is such an important moment.
Yeah.
And she wasn't even there for it.
Yeah, you're right. That is a shame. Here's the good news is that we're past it.
We are now.
The final nine, that's a good number. So, you know, here's hoping 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, you know, like
Somebody commented last night and said it's going to be three tribes of three. Three people win immunity, three people lose their votes, and three other people get to vote. And like, I was just like, please don't even joke about that stuff nowadays.
And this is another positive of the new era. I think going by history, at this point, they kind of cut it out. At the final, I think they let the final nine to the end ride out most of the time with very minimal twists. And that's very exciting. And so I have like high level of confidence that like the next few episodes are going to be the better part of the season.
Agreed. And I feel like this season has a lot of momentum right now. I feel like it's really cruising. Mm-hmm. I think since the Jason boot, that episode with the Sage versus Shannon going on as like a prelude to what was going to happen the next week, I think there's been a lot of momentum here. I wasn't expecting Nate to go home. Honestly, I really wasn't expecting MC to go home last night. I did think it was ultimately going to be Sophie. So there's a lot of momentum here. I get Rizzo now. I get Savannah now. I mean, I feel like Rizzo right now, he's evolved, right? They talked about Pokemon earlier on the season. He went from Rizzo to Riz God. What's his third form? What's the next version of him? It's like Riz Goat. Yeah. That's where Riz has Goat. To go. He's got to go to That's Riz Goat. But, you know, I feel like he's evolved and I'm saying, okay, Rizzo is playing this game very hard. He's playing it aggressively. He even said that people were doing the Genevieve on top of him of her saying, holy whatever. And then him going, I can't believe that just worked. The two of them were, it was like, show us our new era kings or queens in in red or something like that.
They're both wearing red.
It was great. So
yeah. You could see the runway for Rizzo. Mm-hmm. The puzzle piece is starting to come together. Like, cause now him and Savannah and Sophie, they do have all these advantages, like you pointed out. And you could kind of see how this could just keep going up. You can keep going up for them. So, especially given their edits, you know, so.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big part of it. I'm trying to find a comment from last night that we had on our episode, and I thought it was a good point, and I thought it would be good to kind of bring up here. And I maybe they weren't in like the best mindset when they wrote it, but I do feel like it's still something that's worth bringing here. Okay, so this is Valet Boy 21. Two seasons in a row, production gives an additional advantage to the winner of a challenge where the smaller contestants have a significantly higher chance of winning. They did it with Eva last season, again this season with Savannah. Anything there for you? Does that ring true for you? Does that stand out to you, I guess, is what I should ask.
I feel like it doesn't really stand out to me. I think what's true is that different body types and different like people have advantages in different types of challenges, right? And so true equity over the course of a season is that there are going to be some challenges that are, you know, better for just pure brute strength. Some challenges are where the puzzle person shines, and some challenges are when someone with a smaller frame is like in an advantage. The fact that they're replaced with specific, I think that's a coincidence in my opinion. That just speaks to a greater point where I really think that they should keep moving that direction more than they already do, and have a wider variety of challenges that test different skill sets on a week-to-week basis. I think sometimes, especially in the pre-merge, they're a little bit monotonous, or homogenous, I would say, like in terms of what it tests, like an obstacle course and a puzzle at the end, pretty much, right? So I think that there should be challenges where a smaller body frame is at an advantage.
Yeah. And I get where this comment's coming from is, you know, it's the challenge where there's an extra advantage attached to it. But I think in last season, if not mistaken, that was a stage challenge. Eva had to get to the final stage to even have a shot to win it. So, I get where people are coming. People want to look for conspiracies because, oh, they want the Uli 3 to win. Like I always say, it's not that they want the Uli 3 to succeed. They want whoever's in the minority to succeed. They think that that's better TV. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Yeah. 48 probably could have used a flip here or there, but it doesn't always work. We're not always rooting for the underdog. Sometimes we really like the top dogs and we're really pissed when one of the top dogs gets screwed by a twist.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, though, all of the twists, all of the advantages that are being put into this game, they're being put in to help the people who are not on top.
For what it's worth, just like by being out there, at least in this era, I have a pretty high level of confidence that every single decision is in fact planned out like they say publicly. There are a lot of conspiracy theories, like, because from a reality TV producer standpoint, it would be extremely tempting to change it up, like, given the information you have about where the story is going, so you could influence it. That's kind of like absolutely like what most reality TV shows do. But Survivor, they just look at it in a different way, at least now. You know, I can't speak to the bottle twist in Cook Islands. That's kind of, but now, like,
hurry up.
I think they planned it all out beforehand, because if they didn't, I think different decisions would be made, you know, if they were trying to like optimize for entertainment as they went.
I think last night proved that once they lock in, they're locked in, because I think that they knew, like I said, they knew that they were going to split at 10. And Will had said last night, he said originally the reason they split in the post-merge because of time. They need to get two people out. They needed a double boot episode. No, they don't need a double boot episode anymore because Jake is gone. But they did this anyway. And so, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think people get a little too caught up in, oh, we know this, we know that. Look, we know who's on 50. If you don't know who's on 50, I don't know how you are still listening to our podcast. I've gotten so much shit for spoiling who's on 50, air quotes. It's like, I didn't do it. Inside Survivor did it. I just know. So I'm going to talk about it. And I'm not going to pretend that I have that I'm like smart at picking or something, just because, you know, I think people look at that and say, oh, well, Rizzo and Savannah are on 50. So the producers are trying to rig it for them. They don't know at this time that those are the two people that they're putting on 50. They don't care.
That requires some. They need, whoever's saying that needs to instill a bit more critical thinking. Like, they did. What are the odds that they've cast this group of people and they're like, and we're also going to hand select who we want to be on 50, and we are going to engineer the whole season so that they could try and get on 50? That's simply not plausible.
Not plausible. Sorry. Thank you, sorry, Andy. Here, the voice of reason. Thank God. What else do you want to get to with this episode? Because I got a couple of questions I still want to ask, but I don't know if there's anything that you're driving at that you're itching to talk about.
I think, my big takeaway was like dissecting the sort of the idol dynamics, like especially with Rizzo and the leverage that he had. I mean, when I went into Survivor 47, I was of the mind, you know, I had 46 on the mind and stuff, but I like did some data analysis. I'm like, people don't even play idols correctly anymore. So they're like, whatever, you should just avoid them. I was definitely... I was wrong. I was like, that's not totally right. Like, idols are powerful, but they're a situational advantage. Like, I actually, to this day, I wouldn't say that they are more powerful inherently than a steal vote. I think a steal vote is probably a better advantage to have in most situations. You know, what's like a smart player will think of interesting ways to use the power they have. And that's also, entertaining as a fan to like what for these advantages to be in play. I'm sure they're going to be on 50 idols. Like that was a sham boat.
If we didn't get 95% on that, I don't know what people are voting for.
People finding their way into a certain advantage or power and then thinking of great ways to leverage it and use it is what makes Survivor exciting every season.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think I agree with you. I think there's this feeling that the idols were the problem. It was the advantage get-in that people got tired of. And I think people lost sight of what advantage get-in was. It's how one of my big Survivor pet peeves is people overusing the term purple. And yeah, saying, Matt got voted out of this season and said he was purple when he had like the eighth most confessionals. We got voted out. Mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, you don't know what purple is. Like at that point, I think Sophie Segretti had like four confessionals the whole season. And he's trying to claim he was purple. And people overuse that phrase. And I think people, they put the blame on the idols when the idols are the best thing to ever happen to Survivor. The idols changed the way Survivor worked, yeah. Right? Like yeah. Up through the first 10 seasons, we watched a very same type of game. And you were reliant 100% on characters and swaps and dynamics. Once the idol got introduced, you think about the idol storylines, just the fact of the idol being found in by Hogaboom. And then Terry with his idol in season 12 is amazing. Yule with his idol and the way he manipulates the game with that. And then in season 14, the way Yao Man plays real idols, because that was the first season without superpowered idols. Yep. Season 15 with idols, season 16 with idols. You go all the way up through heroes versus villains. I mean, idols were so well done. The problem was in the late 20s, early 30s, all of a sudden it wasn't just one idol or two idols or three idols. It became more and more. And then there were more advantages. And then you had steal a vote, lose like whatever it was, just an extra vote, all of these different things. I think that's when people started to get frustrated and then they started to blame it on idols. Trust me, it's not idols that you dislike. You like idols. If you don't 100%. Like idols, you're watching the wrong show because they've been here now for 40 seasons.
Idols are one of the best things they've ever done. And I think 98% of fans agree with that. And I think there's some, it's almost become a straw man where it's like people complain about too many advantages. And then someone's like, oh, you don't want idols. You don't want it. Like idols are great. And when it comes to Survivor, I think with most things, there's a sweet spot. It's like a whole Goldilocks situation, right? And that applies to everything. That applies to people complaining there are too many super fans on Survivor, right? In the past, I remember like going to the RHAP archives, people were very strongly complaining that there were not enough people who knew the show were being cast for the show, right? And so there's just like a good mix is great. Should everyone be a super fan? No, because then it kind of collapses on itself in this like too meta way that's not the best TV in theory. The other side is just as bad, I think. So a mix with that is good. With the advantages, a sweet spot is great. And you mentioned the late 20s, early 30s. It's funny because advantage get-in was way too much, but that was specifically Game Changers. I actually think that my take is if they went back to they straight up did the rules and format of Survivor 26 to 32 or 33, that is kind of the sweet spot in almost every way. And that is like one of my favorite eras of Survivor. I think when people crap on the 30s, I think it does start with Game Changers and then maybe
that's a good point.
Subsequent seasons.
I always try to lump in the late 20s. I haven't rewatched the late 20s in a while. And now I'm finally rewatching Caramon again. And I'm like, it's just idols. You're right. It is pretty much with Game Changers and the fact that Suri goes home in her way. And the next season they turn around and Ben wins the game the way he wins it. And that's when people started to get really frustrated. So I think that is a good point. And I think like, you know, when they're talking about there's too many people who know the game, whatever, MC is somebody who doesn't know the game. And she's pretty open about that. Her first season was your season. Her favorite season is 44. It's like, it's very limited knowledge of what Survivor is. I think the problem is though, because they're so committed to not making heroes and villains at this point, which is a topic we talked about last night of how the show is not really gunning for, we want our Ruperts and we want our Russells, we want our Colbys and we want our Jerrys. I don't know why they're so committed to that, but they are. MC just falls into this, well, I don't know the game that well. I'm not integral to the votes that are happening. And now I'm kind of just being overshadowed and we're kind of feeling neutral. I feel like everybody except for MC's family and friends probably feels pretty neutral about MC based on how this game just went for her. So I just feel like when I look at how this all shook out, when I think about getting people who don't know the game, you need the people who don't know the game who are willing to be aggressive. And I'm not saying, again, caramel on the brain. I'm not saying you need Shamar levels of aggressive. You don't need people screaming an inch from your face. David didn't know the game last season. Mm-hmm. And I thought David worked pretty well. And I don't think Say understood the game last season. Say worked out pretty well. Say will probably kill me for saying that, but she's great TV because I don't think she understood the game as well as Kyle did or Camilla did. And I'm not saying Kyle and Camilla aren't good. I'm happy they're both going to be on 50 as well. But I think you're right. Like finding that balance, but also finding people who are larger than you. You need your people who don't know the game to be so much larger than life that when these little nerds are getting under their skin and beating them, they say, these are the kids I used to put in lockers. What the hell is going on? I'm going to beat them now.
I largely agree with you. I want to like not let MC off the hook or whatever. I just want to say I enjoyed MC. I don't think that she's a flop casting or anything like that. It's all about the mix. It's all about the puzzle piece, and they tell you that in casting a lot. You know, if you don't, especially if you don't make the season, it's like, oh, it's just a puzzle piece. But there's truth to that. And with true, like genuine, like I enjoyed Jason and MC, and I think they deserve to be Survivor players. But I think for 49 in particular, I would have enjoyed for them to keep the troublemakers.
Great.
I think that could have been the right puzzle piece. And then I would have loved to see Jason on 51 and MC on 52, right? But that probably was their initial design, and it could have changed the mix kind of ever so slightly, but maybe in a very significant way. I think that like with Australian Survivor, right? The mix is much different. It's like 24 people a season, and four of them are the super fans, right? The other 20 don't know what the heck is going on. They don't, like, in terms of the show, like they're just showing up. But Australian Survivor produces some really great seasons, and I think when it comes to people who are not fans, it's all about the gamble. It's all about the low floor, high ceiling. I think that with super fans, and I don't even want to call super fans low ceiling necessarily, but if there is so many of them a season, then maybe there's a diminishing charm to the super fans.
And every super fan, and I know you've done it. I know you did it before you went out there for 47. Every super fan has already played the game 20 times in their head. They already know, you know, I've already seen myself get voted out in the pre-merge. I've seen myself make final three. I've seen myself make the jury. You've already played the game. What would happen if I was on a season with somebody like Andy or somebody like Q or somebody like Rome? How would I play the game? You've already thought through this so much. I think what happens is you hit that island and you say to yourself, okay, here's my game plan. Let's make it happen. Let's go. I'll adapt when I have to, but I'm going to try to stick to this game plan as long as I can.
Yeah.
I agree with you. If you find some of those people like a Garrett from season 28, right? He didn't make it very far. He's great in those two episodes. He lasts.
Right. Yeah. And I agree. But with the Australian Survivor, the thing is they have so many gambles for people who haven't seen it. Honestly, a lot of them are flops, but Australian Survivor is taking care of that by just truly purpling. A lot of them. But what you get is some diamonds in the rough who become very, very, very integral parts of the season in a very refreshing way. And so what I'm like rooting for is obviously seasons to be good, but also for the game to be pushed forward. And what it takes is a combination. It takes for the game to be pushed forward. It requires some people out there who've seen everything so that they kind of know what direction they could take the game in. They've, you know, studied it a lot and come up with interesting moves that like required some studying and some data. And then also people who come from it from a completely fresh point of view and don't have that context and are breaking the rules, right? And it works out for them. So
yeah.
That mix is what it takes to not only produce a good season, but to truly push the game. And I think Survivor's it's been going on for 49 seasons, we're gonna have 50th season, I think we're going strong. That's what it takes for Survivor to remain great. Is not the changing of the format and the twist necessarily, but pushing the game forward.
Well, and I think, you know, China's my favorite season. Todd's the biggest fan to ever win. James had no idea what the hell he was stepping on the island for.
Right.
Two of the best characters ever. That's one of the best casts. I think that might be the best all newbie cast ever assembled. I love that cast. Jean Robert is out of his mind. He's just out there to play a game. Courtney Yates is probably like the second or third best recruit of all time. Amanda's amazing.
Yeah.
It really worked. And again, like you're saying, push the game forward. That season pushed the game forward because the gameplay was so elevated. Look at the seasons that follow that season. It's because China does this, and all of a sudden everybody wanted to play it like that. Or how are we going to protect against potentially having an idol and going home with this and doing that? Like, there were so many thoughts that were going on. And I'll ask you this question because I know you've been such a fan for so long.
Yeah.
What's your favorite era of casting? Like, in terms of casting, and that doesn't mean like, oh, I want to like hang out with these people. Just in terms of when you think about what's the best stretches of what seasons were, like what seasons work with casts.
That's a great question. I definitely have my favorite eras to talk about just in terms of seasons. But when it comes to casting, I do know that early 20s is just not, it just went way too far in a direction that I don't prefer, right? I will, and whatever, I'm not trying to be biased. I will stand by the new era state of casting. I think that it's good. I think these casts are good season after season. But as far as the best, I feel like, honestly, the real answer is the very start, obviously, because they had like way more people to pick from. And I will say this is kind of like the de facto answer, but I actually kind of believe it, is I think they did their most masterful job of casting for Borneo. Because if it wasn't literally like super iconic, then it wouldn't have taken off. And I've seen a lot of social strategy reality shows where season one wasn't larger than life and the show didn't take off. You know what I mean? So I'll say the early era is when they were best at casting. But I want to give a shout out to David vs. Goliath, which is, I think, my favorite season. And that was a great newbie cast, and it had a great mix of fans and not fans.
Yeah. And this is what I was trying to get you to see. J.D. Robinson should have been the one on this podcast, because this is what I was trying to get the answer of. You know, new era casting is good, but also 12 to 20. That's where my head goes. And I do agree with your take, though, that early on, we didn't know what it was. But also, what do all those people have in common? They don't really know the game. And then you get to Australia. They'd all watch Borneo, but they don't really know what the game is. Then you get to Africa, and people were learning the game, and they were willing to play the game. And you had your heroes, and you had your villains. I mean, think about the start of that show. Sue's rat speech. Hatch just in general. Rudy was a hero, which I know people now are like, what the hell was he saying? He was a hero, right? And so then you go to the next season. Colleen is America's sweetheart. You had all these things going on. And then from 12 to 20, I think was when the show really hit the turning point of reality TV is becoming something bigger, right? Yeah. It's becoming something different than what it used to be. And how are we going to do this? We need to get our hot people. We need to get our actors. We need to get this. As Corinne says, we've got to have hot people. We can't have ugly people. And so we started going that route, but they did a really good job of getting people. Survivor could have become too meta at that point, and it didn't. They did a good job of balancing the meta with the non-meta, and they found the people who didn't know the game who could build up and just make them great. But you also had Sari during that era. You had Parvati during that era who didn't know Survivor. And now you can't say anything bad about Parvati without getting sniped. So it's like you have all of these people and all of these characters. And so I just feel like that's what the new era needs to find. I always say the individuals they're putting on the show are fine. I do think the puzzle is a little bland at this point. I think the puzzle, there needs to be a little spice to what they're making the puzzle look like. Yeah. Because the puzzle they're putting together, it has all the pieces, but it wasn't very fun to put together. And I'm not super thrilled with the end result. I just think that they got to find a way to find those larger than life type people. And maybe I'm missing this, but that's just
how I feel. I agree. I think that new era casting is in a good place, but they could just, in my opinion, they could go a little bit in that direction. Some people wanted to go way to the other side. I think just changing it a little bit would definitely go a long way. But I have another take on this topic that it gives grace to everyone, honestly, because I think a huge part of the complaint, and the complaints are really loud right now, because objectively, we have not had a great stretch this past year, Survivor. Much love to, you know, whatever, the players.
They know who they are.
The last 12 months, or is it not 12 months? I'm sorry. The last
Yeah, you don't want to count yourself in this. Remember that. The last 11 months, that's where you want to go here. You don't want to count yourself.
Just as a TV product, I'm talking about the post-merger 48 and the pre-merger 49. Not been the best stretch. Mm-hmm. But it's really amplified the criticism of the new era. And a lot of that is fair, and it's just fans critiquing the game and the show. But then a lot of that is directed at the state of casting, and like everyone is like a loser nerd, super fan, like they suck, blah, 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 blah. We want Parvati back. We want blah, 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 blah. My thing is that it really is a systemic thing that it makes sense how everyone's acting, where when Boston Rob was doing it for the first and second time and Parvati was doing it, honestly, Survivor was big in a viewership sense, but it wasn't, they built what it is now. Mm-hmm. From a reverence that the fans have for it. Survivor's legendary. It's like the coolest piece of media ever, and it is off the backs of Suri and Parvati and Sandra and Boston Rob and Tony and mm-hmm. Ozzy, et cetera, right? But when they were doing it, it wasn't that. So they were just kind of like doing their thing. They were doing their thing. They were crushing challenges. They were like being good at Survivor. And they had a just sort of energy that they were – that they just crush all aspects of their life. And so they built this. And so now when you step on Survivor, and there are a lot of super fans, but people, even people who are not super fans, you see it every time someone wins individual immunity. Like Savannah said in this very episode, how she's like obviously so proud of herself. You immediately think of your family watching it, and you think of, yeah, everyone who's inspired you along the way, because it's such a big thing. And it's this vaunted legend, like iconic thing to win individual immunity because of eras, bygone eras, right? Yeah. And so to the credit of the old school players, like they looked really cool doing it, and they were like casual about how awesome they were at Survivor. But they've built this such incredible thing that when someone goes and does it, it's, you just get chills, you get emotional doing every aspect of Survivor because it is special. And so I certainly don't want to shame the new era people, myself included, for being just having this out of body surreal experience, because that's what it is to play Survivor now, given what it's become.
And I think that's so well put, because you think about, it's been on for 25 years. You have people who are on the show who are negative 7 years old when this show started, right? How could they ever understand what the people who've been there since day one truly understand? And so, you know, I mean, Mario Lanza, I have Mario Lanza's book. I love Mario Lanza. I think he has great takes, but I also know Mario Lanza got so tired of it. And I'm like, why do you watch? Why do you pay attention? And I think that, you know, he knows really what it meant in season one, season two, season three. It gets to the point where you just say, okay, would you rather Survivor not be on? And my thing, whenever I make my critiques about the show, I never, ever, ever want Survivor to end. I want Survivor to keep going. When I'm making the critiques, I'm saying, these are the things that we've been complaining about. When I say we, I mean the fan base as a whole, even players have been complaining about. These are the things that just seem silly. Let's make it better. But I totally agree with you. There are some people where no matter what, at 9:35, they're going to comment on our video, or they're going to comment on Reddit, they're going to comment somewhere, and they're going to say, this is stupid. That was the worst episode I've ever seen. It's just going to happen every single week. You're not going to make everybody happy. Those people still enjoy showing up at 9:35 to say that that was the worst episode they've ever seen. And so I think you're right, though. Like, how can Survivor ever be what it was? I know right now there's the whole conversation around, what does Parvati's win really mean in AU versus the world? And then other people are saying, if that's not a full win, then what's a new era win? Is that two-thirds of a win? It's two-thirds of the days, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I think at the end of the day, Survivor is so much different than what it used to look like. And some people are okay with that. Some people aren't okay with that. Some people wouldn't be happy unless it did look like China, unless it did look like Borneo. They want the OG thing. I understand that, you know, to stay on for 49 seasons, you have to be evolving. Jeff has that 100% right. There is no doubt about it. But at the same time, I feel like they've stopped evolving at some parts in the new era. And mm-hmm. that's where my frustration comes from. Because again, I don't think the individuals on the show from casting, I don't think every decision they're making is bad. But when the puzzle just keeps going together and looking like the same puzzle over and over and over again, and then the production twists look the exact same over and over and over again, it just starts to be like, all right, I want something new. I want to feel as excited about Rizzo as I did about Just the Goliath, like the David tribe, like you said, David's Goliath. That was only 12 seasons ago. And that was awesome. When that scene on the beach where they all figure out what advantages they have and Carl like falls over, it's incredible. It's incredible. And that was only 12 seasons ago. Figure it out. Like, make it look different. You can do it. It's still there. Don't get too complacent.
Well, yeah. So 50 is going to be what it's going to be. It's in the hands of the fans. So blah, blah, blah. But I think that there's a lot to think about. I think we can already start projecting into the 50s because here's what I don't know what it's going to look like. In fact, I think it's very unknown what the 50s may look like. But what I do know is that the big executive producers, like the creatives of Survivor, they pride themselves in being creative, and they used to get so much flack not too long ago for coming up with changing the game up every single season, coming up with way too many ideas and messing everything up and changing it. And a lot of that was back then. It was, but now they're not changing. They've arrived on something that they're happy with, and they haven't changed it for a while. But I think that by the time 51 and 52 actually come around, and I think they're probably planning it as we speak, as creators, they're going to be, I think, in the mood to come up with the new ideas again. And so the good news is that the 50s are not going to look like the 40s. Yeah. I feel pretty confident about that. The unknown is like, I think it could start looking really wonky. Like, hopefully they come up with great ideas. You know what I mean? I'm hopeful. But 50 is going to definitely be this culmination of what we've come to expect post COVID. And then who knows?
I also think, depending on what happens on 50, if old school players dominate 50, I do think that might make Jeff go, okay, the new era thing, I've been trying to say it's harder. I've been trying to say it's this, whatever. And then if the old school players come out and dominate it, it's like, they just beat you at your own game. They came to your house. They took your ball and they're going home. Does that impact maybe the way they're thinking about it? I also think that a reason why so many people are being so negative about 49 and are so down on this season and are so down about the cast is because they're just pissed about the 50 cast. And I think because they're mad about the cast for 50, they're not giving the benefit of the doubt on anything right now. But I think that we're going to have four or five returning, at least half returning, somewhat returning player seasons in the 50s. I think they're going to go in on it because they're going to see how excited people, once 50 start, they're going to see how excited people are to watch it. Just like every returning player season, we've been through them all. And when you sit there and you say, well, how'd they not put this person? How'd they not put this person? I'm pissed Terry Deeds was not on Fans versus Favorites. Fans versus Favorites is still a top four or five season in Survivor history. It doesn't matter. And I think that's what's going to end up happening. So with 50, once people can watch it, I think they'll calm down a little bit. And then it's going to be on the producers to figure out what do we like about it?
Yeah.
What do we not like about it?
Right. Very true. And I mean, speaking of balance, I think Survivor's firing on all cylinders when it has the right cadence of new player seasons and returning. The new era is just, it went way too far. Like, 9 in a row without a returning slot is
too much stretch in the history of the show.
Yep. The mid 20s, on the other hand, was like, they normalized it and then it became kind of weird. Right. So, if they can find that right balance, I think that could be absolutely the best case scenario of what the 50s look like, of returning player seasons, like in the mix every few seasons, so that you get to know new people, which is always super exciting about Survivor. But not just you're excited to watch them play once, but you know that returning player seasons are always around the corner. And so you're like, you have that at top of your mind that like, oh, I can't wait to see the standout player play again. So that would be on my wish list for the 50s as a fan. But I think with 50 discourse, and you know me, Phil, I'm like, I don't even read stuff.
Yeah.
I can tell that just from my point of view, I think 50's been so built up and anticipation has been drummed up so much that especially the super fans have already burnt themselves out on 50 content, and the freaking season preview hasn't even dropped. You know what I mean? I think that I think it's going to be super exciting. I think it's going to be super cool, basically, no matter what happens, because people have gripes about the cast, but objectively, it's just a really great group of 24 survivors. It's a great group. Is like, there's a lot of great names on that cast, right? But the problem is that it's just been the only returning player season, so it's been built up to this like crazy level. That's gonna just, and whenever something is built up that way, like no one leaves happy. So like, I want everyone to pace themselves with 50, like especially during the season. Just try to enjoy it. I bet it's gonna be amazing. And then I think, and then for the 50s, if they can do one every 3 or 4 seasons, then it'll be in a much healthier place.
I don't know if you had the 15th anniversary magazine that had This Is My Island as like the 7th best moment in Survivor history. I don't know if you had that magazine. Will and I did an entire podcast on that magazine. Jeff would always say back during season 30, it's just our 30th season. We don't need to go crazy for it's just our 30th season. We're going to have more. Because I think you hit this on the head, because there was nothing for so long. It was just new era, new players. 50's been built up as if it's this culmination. People think Jeff's going to retire. This is it. Like the show might end, whatever.
Yeah.
It feels like it's so much more monumental. When you think about season 40, it was Winners at War. It was epic. We had seen 4 returning players play 2 seasons before. Yeah. They were on 38. We watched Joe, Aubrey, Wentworth, and David Wright come out and play season 38 right before 40. So it didn't have that like, oh, this is the end all be all. And then COVID happened. It almost was the end all be all. But like, I feel like with 50, it feels like it's too much. There's too much pressure on the season. This season has to be good. Mm-hmm. It has to be good. 40 didn't feel like it had to be good. And honestly, 40 wasn't that good. So.
Oh, okay. Well, we can talk about that.
Yeah, I know. 40,
I remember being so like, I was obviously by then just like so in the world, like I was an RHGP patron. Mm-hmm. I remember it's just so funny being a super fan. Like I remember where I was when the Inside Survivor dropped of the 40 cast. I don't know, Phil. I thought that was really special. Like it seemed like a little bit like the end all be all. Like what could they do after this? Because Winners at War sounded exciting, but I wasn't excited until I saw that they actually delivered on the names and actually had like whatever. Kim, you know, like, I'm like, they actually know the history enough that they know Kim is a must have. So that was really exciting. And Winners of War was not perfect, but I'm a Tony stan. So actually,
yeah, I mean, I was Tony, I'm a Tony and Michelle stan. So I did get what more could I have truly wanted from that season? Right. But I get what you're saying. I mean, I'll never forget. I got told, I was like, hey, this is what the cast can be. And I was like, what? like it blew my mind, and it was epic and it was awesome. And yeah, there's people again, but even on that season, I wanted Todd. I was like, where's Chris Doherty? What's going on? Where's Tom Westman? It's okay that we didn't get those people though, because it was just cool to see them all play. I think when season 50 starts, the mentality around Survivor is going to change. The feeling is going to change, right? Mm-hmm. I've been a Detroit Lions fan since I was a child. And now that the Lions are good, they win one week, they're going to win the Super Bowl. They lose one week, it's a disaster. We have the worst GM in the world, blah, blah. That's how Survivor feels. It's an episode to episode. I hate this, I love this. I hate this, I love this. I hate this, I love this. And it's been a lot of I hate this for a while here. But I think just the excitement of watching people we know stand on that beach again is going to be enough to propel into the 50s. And honestly, people were, why are you complaining so hard about the post-merge split tribals and stuff? I don't think production listens to me. I don't think Jeff listens to me, but Jeff and production are listening. They're listening in overall, and they're going to see that people really want the 50s to look different. Yeah. They want it to be more returning player seasons. They know also who people are pissed weren't on 50. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's going to be a lot more listening. So voice your complaints now, because look, the ratings are fine. Survivor's doing fine. Survivor's not going anywhere. And Jeff's not going anywhere. I know y'all think he is, but he's not. And so just get ready for what's going to come next. And yeah, I mean, we're doing maybe a little too much complaining, but complain away and say, do the constructive criticism of what you actually want for season 51 and season 52. Don't just say, this sucks, I hate this.
Yeah.
Figure out what more, you know?
That's and, cool. You know, with the fan opinion, the public opinion, it's very fickle. That's the complaints are super loud right now because Survivor hasn't been at its very best lately. Especially if 50 delivers, not even just if it delivers, but just seeing, you know, again, the season preview and the preseason, what, by the time we get into the swing of the preseason and listening to the interviews, people are going to, it's going to be, it's going to be like a very, very exciting time to be a survivor. Yeah. It's going to be very exciting.
Totally agree. All right, let's wrap it up with this. So RIZGOD, Riz God, baby, the man, the myth, the legend, W guest. That's you, Andy. Well done. Always love having you.
Rizzo. Dude, Rizzo, you cooked. You cooked.
Cinema. Cinema fire.
That was
turning in. You ever play that game? What is it, like Sentences for Neanderthals or whatever the hell it is, where like you have to like speak in one syllable words? it's like a party game. It's got like a stupid like blow up balloon mallet too. I forget what it's called, but that's how I feel whenever I'm like trying to be fire cinema unk.
Also, shout out to JD if he's still in the chat. I love
JD. I know JD, super fan. Got to show up to some events, man. I got to see you around 50. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. All right, the last thing I'll ask you is, who do you think is going to win?
Ooh. So, like I mentioned with this player, the edit remains to be seen, like the direction. But I feel like I'm on the Sophie B train. Like I was. Like I jumped up on the Sophie B train in the pre-merge. I think she's great. And she's got that really great quality where – obviously, she survived the disaster tribe, but she really didn't even sweat through that period of the game in terms of getting voted out. And then all of a sudden, she lands on that swap tribe, and she's like the belle of the ball. Everyone wants to work with her. That's like what a winner. That's what happens to a winner. You know what I mean? For them to have that quality. And so, yeah, I'm in her corner. I think she could win.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I've been saying Sophie for a while now. I was really high on Juwan. I'm feeling a little bit lower on Juwan right now, but I just feel like if Sophie gets to the end, she's got the story that beats anybody. She got to get her out by fire because she has the story that beats anybody. And right now, I don't think it matters with so far what's happened in the post-merge. Rizzo and Savannah, what they just did last episode was pretty cool, but four people didn't see it.
I didn't see it. That's actually big. That's actually
yeah.
Big. Whether or not you see it is it, and that's like a lot of the things that happen in the pre-merge, like the downside is that you don't have like the jury watching that. And so, yeah. And she's got this knowledge is power, which I mean, I think people understand how powerful the knowledge is power is, but like we haven't even seen it at its full power yet. And she's in a position where she could actually, it's kind of like trivially easy for her to play it right in this situation. You know what I mean? So like, that's a very powerful advantage.
Yeah.
And she's got it.
She's got it. I know. If she plays it right, which I think she will.
Which is like, you know.
Yeah.
Which is great.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Sophie Bellarity train. We're both ready for her to win the season. So like this video. Subscribe to the channel. Thank you all so much for listening. McKenna's doing an amazing race recap right after this. So just so everybody knows. And I think Survivor Rewind is also happening tonight. So this is if we were a TV channel, just don't turn off. You know, that's all it is. Andy, thank you so much for jumping on. Appreciate you being here. And we'll see how the season shakes out. But I'm feeling more positive now. My blood pressure is down after last night. Thank you.
We're having fun. Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Thank you. All right, everybody. I'll be back on Sunday with Just Blake. Just Blake. That's all it is. Just Blake. Blake will be my guest. Yeah, exactly. Andy was going to be in that spot. And so we flopped Andy and Blake. And now it's going to be Blake. And so stay tuned for the thumbnail. Hopefully it's a good one. I think me and Austin are cooking something up right now. So anyway, thank you all so much for listening. I'll see you Sunday at noon Eastern time with our Predictions of Power Rankings for episode number 9.